Hello everyone, welcome to our tour of Azure. I'm John Noonan of Azure Marketing, and I'm excited to have Technical Product Manager Jason Clark here today to lead this session. Feel free to submit questions via chat during Jason's presentation, and we'll answer as many as we can at the end of the presentation. And just to note, we'll be making a recording of this webinar available to all of you via email for your future reference. And with that, I'll hand it over to Jason.
Thanks, John. Hi, folks. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are. First of all, thank you very much for spending the time with us this morning. What I'd like to do is just sort of outline the approach that we're going to take in the next 45 minutes as we go through this tour of Azure. So I just wanted to start with this agenda slide. As its name would suggest, a tour of Azure means really what and where is Azure. And so we're going to start with a very high-level discussion. You know, the Azure covers a massive range of implementations from IaaS through to PaaS and SaaS. All of these terms are things that we're going to discuss during this session. But we're going to cover off the major features and functions of Azure at a very high level. So the first thing that we need to do is sort of have a look at the, for a tour of Azure, we would need to look where they are located. What are the primary services that Azure offers in terms of a common nomenclature that most of us are familiar with, and I'll go through these, IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS, so infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. And then looking at the additional services that we can use within Azure to build solutions that meet particular customer problems. And then we'll be taking a tour through Azure in terms of looking at the portal and going through, by way of demonstration and discussion, some of the primary features and all of the features at a discussion level as to what they provide. We'll summarize that and provide you with access to a poster from the Azure website, which we'll be able to use as a reminder of some of the things that we've discussed here. During this webinar series, we'll be going deeper and deeper into various things that I bring up in this initial webinar. So please think of this as the sort of starting point in Azure, and then we will be going over the series of weeks and months into deeper and deeper, more technical detail. I am aware that we have a wide range of audiences, from salespeople to IT pros and developers, and I will attempt to make sure that I cover those components that are relevant to each of you as we go through this session. So having said that as a starting point, what I'd like to do is just start with some fundamental discussions around Azure and talk to you about the location and the structure of Azure. So moving on to our first of five slides, what you can see here is the 15 regions that Azure is operating in at the moment globally. Australia down in the bottom far right-hand corner has been announced recently. And these are the locations that Azure is situated in terms of data center components. We will talk about some of the significance of the location of these data centers when we start talking about features that enable high availability and resilience and disaster recovery within environments. So we'll be talking about availability zones and things like that, and I'll talk more about that. This is just a graphical view of the scale of Azure globally at the moment, and we'll be continuing to add more regions to that as we go on in the future. So talking about cloud services, one of the first things that we really need to understand in cloud services is a nomenclature that we can be happy with that enables us to describe all services from where we are today. If you think about the traditional data center at the end of the corridor in your building, or the raised floor data center, that's really what we see on the left-hand side, which is this idea of a private cloud. A private cloud is simply a highly virtualized, well-managed, automated data center. And so that's that process that Microsoft has been working in over its many, many years to help you to optimize your data center and reduce the cost of owning that through implementations of things like System Center and Windows Server, Hyper-V, and so on. As we move into this brave new world of cloud, there are sort of three general distinctions that people make, and I find this slide a really useful way of explaining the primary differences between infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. From a Microsoft perspective, we have Azure, which provides all of those functions. So let me explain. In the data center on the far left-hand side, the private cloud side of things, you own and operate everything from the hardware, the networking, the operating system, the hypervisor, the application, the data. Everything is maintained and managed by yourselves. When we move into infrastructure as a service, we provide in Azure virtual machines. And what that means is in a multi-tenanted way, so more than one tenant on an individual physical host, we manage everything from the hardware, the storage, the networking, up to the hypervisor, and then you manage the virtual machines that you instantiate. And I'll demonstrate what that looks like in a way. So you would manage the operating system, you would manage the application and the data that's loaded on top of that. So that is what infrastructure as a service is. As we move to platform as a service, we talk about deploying highly scalable web-based applications. And what that means is we manage everything. If you think about it, an analogy, and it is really just an analogy, we could look at SQL in this environment. So in infrastructure as a service, you would fire up a virtual machine and install SQL Server yourself into that virtual machine. You maintain the operating system and the SQL Server and data. In platform as a service, we run SQL for you. You just manage your data. So if you think about it, SQL.exe is like a ubiquitous runtime that runs in the cloud, and you essentially present it with a job or some data. It does its job and returns a result to you. Software as a service, we manage everything. And a good example of that, obviously, is Office 365, which is hosted on Azure. So Office 365 is a software as a service application, and we manage everything up to the application. So that's a good way of designating an understanding between the structures that we have in terms of the different cloud services. So I'm going to stop at that slide for now and move on into some demonstrations. So to do that, I'm going to just share my screen. So I'm just launching a screen share now. And that should hopefully be visible. Right, hopefully you can see my Azure portal at the moment. Now, there are many different ways to embark upon a tour of Azure. So what I wanted to do was acknowledge those up front and then explain to you why we've chosen the method that we have in terms of today. One way that you could explore Azure is by going to the documentation. And this is quite a nice way of looking at the primary features and functions designated into four primary sections: those that are compute services, those that are data services, those that are app services, and those that are networking services. And as a good way to get started, you could just choose one element, a virtual machine, and then you could have a look at creating. There's a whole lot of information on each one of these pages, on each of the services, about how to create a virtual machine, and it will take you through all of the processes of creating a virtual machine. So for those of you who are new to Azure, that's a nice way to start exploring some of the Azure features and functions. Another way is to go to the features page. And as to have a look at these groupings that we've got here, and then some of the services that we have within those groupings. So, for example, in media services and CDM, we have media and the content delivery network. In hybrid integration, we've got BizTalk services and service buses. In web and mobile, we've got websites, mobile services, API management, notification hubs, and event hubs. And these are tools or components or services that we can bring together to meet a business requirement. So we'll talk about that as we go through this in a little bit more detail. The way that I've chosen to go through this morning is to have a look at the portal. And this is a good way for us to just start having a look at each of the individual services. For some of you who are new to Azure, you may well know that there are two portals. So I just want to acknowledge and explain why that is up front. If we have a look at our Azure portal here, one of the things that we can do at the top right-hand corner, apart from looking at our subscription and so on like this, we can actually go in and look at the new portal. So I wanted to show you that just to start with. Now, this is a preview portal. A lot of the services that are in preview before they go to market are free and are not charged. So some of the services that we talk about that will be available, for example, if I go to the Windows Azure portal and I go down to caching services, you will see that if you're looking for a new Redis cache, then you need to go to the new sort of Azure portal. And if you're looking for that, it will take you to this new portal. So by virtue of how APIs work and how we are updating our data centers, we will migrate eventually from this portal to this portal. Okay, so it's just a way of explaining it, but this one is not in pr not a production one as yet, but it is available to you to trial new features that are in preview. So having said that, what I'd like to now do is start to go through and work through the portal, and I'm really just going to go from a top-down perspective, and we're going to demo some of the features that exist within here, and we're going to talk about some of the features that are in here. So let's start first of all. One of the things that I wanted to point out straight away is that I am logged in, as you can see, as J.A. Clark at corp.microsoft.com, which is my my login here and my identity here at Microsoft. And so one of the things that you can see is that my identity is originally is linked directly to my Azure subscription. And that's something that we'll talk about with Active Directory identity and multi-factor authentication a little bit later. So going to the top, all items. All items is a way of listing everything, every object that I've instantiated inside my Azure environment, whether it be a virtual machine, a website, a content delivery network, whether it be a cloud service or whatever, it is going to be listed in here, and it's the full list of objects that I have created during my time of doing many demos in Azure. So that's just a starting point. It's just a structured list of everything that you have, and you can arrange it whichever way you like. Let's now start. I want to take the two main sections to start here, virtual machines and websites. So when we were talking earlier and I showed you the slide of IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS, in many ways you can look at virtual machines as being IaaS. This is just infrastructure as a service, so storage, network, and compute. And then websites as being a PaaS implementation. And I think once we go through a little demonstration, it will outline for you the most significant areas in terms of most of the significant differences between IaaS and PaaS in terms of which part of the operating system you maintain and manage and which part we maintain and manage. So let's start at the very basic level. And I've already created a virtual machine in case the demo gods aren't with me this morning. So I've already created some of these, but we'll go through and create some others. So the natural first place to start is just by going to virtual machines and selecting a new virtual machine. Now, we can do a quick create, which is a reduced number of inputs. So I just give the server a name, I choose the administrator username and password, and the location where I want my virtual machine instantiated, and the operating system that I want that to be on that virtual machine. A way of providing more choice as you instantiate it is to choose it from a gallery. So the first thing that you notice is that we've got our images available here, whether they be an image that is just a Windows server or whether it's a Linux server like SUSE or Oracle or whether it's an Ubuntu version or whatever the case may be. So first important thing is infrastructure as a service not only supports Microsoft operating systems, but it also supports open source operating systems. Having said that, we also support tools like Puppet for enabling your development environments and continuous deployment. What you also see down here is My Image and My Disks. And one of the benefits of having a heritage from the data center with Hyper-V and VHDX formats means that you can snapshot a on-premise virtual machine into VHD format and then copy it into Azure if it's sysprepped, and then you can have that as a choice of virtual machines that you want to then instantiate from there. So you don't have to use the version that comes in the gallery. You could use your own SOE uploaded in here and deploy it as normal. And there is ways, if you've got large SOEs, that you could actually capture those and send them via disk to import into the data center as opposed to copying it across your connection. So having said that, let's just go into a Windows server, and I'm going to choose 2012 as my Windows server. This is the date of the release, and I'm going to give it a virtual machine name. Now, this is a very important thing, and you'll see it goes through and make sure that this name doesn't exist anywhere else, so it has to be a unique way, unique name. So I'm going to give it Azure Tour 2 as my name, and then we can choose the size of and tiers of the virtual machine. So I could go to our basic instance of my virtual machine, and I could choose the size of my virtual machine in terms of the amount of memory and the number of cores. I could choose standard and go to much higher ones. And you'll notice we've just recently made available the D series, which is basically a new set of hardware in our data centers globally that provides a much higher throughput and provides SSD drives to reduce the latency and provide high availability and scalability for SQL-based applications and things like that, so that we're providing a highly performing environment. Some of the A9 and A8 ones are also used for HPC compute, as well as the D series for HPC compute. So I'm just going to choose a small one because I'm going to get charged for it whilst I go through the demo, so I'm just going to add it in there. This is the next section is the username and password. This is the administrative account on the operating system that you're instantiating. So you'll notice that if I type in administrator, it says I'm not allowed to use this. So I'm just going to use my admin test is going to be my username, and then a password, which needs to be complex, and it is checked to make sure it meets complexity requirements before you're allowed to go any further. So I've chosen next, and now I need to choose whether I'm going to put this into an existing cloud service or a new cloud service. Now, I'll explain what a cloud service is in a minute, but a cloud service is really a container or a boundary into which you put objects of storage, network, and compute, and you can control them, communication between them. So I'm just going to create a new cloud service at this stage. I'm going to create a region or affinity group. Now, these are the regions that my account is available to access: East US, Central US, West US, and so on. Obviously, we have for Asia Pacific and other regions, we would have different selections here, and it's based upon your login as to where you would be able to access and instantiate objects. And that's an administrative task. So I'm just going to choose South Central at this case. I'm going to choose my standard an automatically generated storage account. I'll explain a little bit about what a storage account is, but essentially it is the person that has the credentials that has the right to access blob, table, or file storage as a storage component of Windows Azure. An affinity group is quite important because it places all of the resources that you create, whether they be virtual machines or virtual networks or notification hubs or whatever, in a close proximity to each other within the data center in order to establish a greater performance. So I can choose to put things in an affinity group. An availability is set as a way of establishing resilience for your application. So when we create a virtual machine and you have it instantiated in Azure, there's typically 6 copies of that operating system and that are available in case of an outage. Now, when you have an availability set, essentially what you are doing is increasing the resilience of your data by making sure that you've got more copies of it. So I'm not going to. I will create an availability set, and I will give it a name. Azure Tour, just as a, oops, if I can spell, just to make sure that we've got one. And then you notice down the bottom here we have endpoints. Endpoints are the ports and sockets that are available for me to access. And you'll notice that the first one that's by default is the remote desktop, and that's what I'm going to use to access this virtual machine in Azure as soon as I've instantiated. I can create other endpoints as and when, either now or later during the implementation. And the final configuration is to decide whether you want to install any extensions in terms of things like Chef or Puppet, if it was a Linux operating system, or whether you wanted to use some of the Symantec or Trend Micro or the Microsoft anti-malware and have that installed and firewalling and securing your virtual machine in the cloud. So I'm just going to click that. That's the end of it. It's creating my virtual machine. You'll notice that I created an Azure Tour 1 earlier, and whilst that's instantiating, what I'll quickly do is just show you how we would access that virtual machine. So let me just access my desktop. So there's the RDP client, and I'll download that in a second and show you how to connect to it once the Tour 2 is created. But this is the RDP file that I get once I've created that virtual machine. And now I can connect to that. There's admin test. And I'm now going to connect to that virtual machine. Now, what this indicates to you, once I load up, and the point of me showing you this, as opposed to the basic starting point within Windows Azure, is that it will allow me to point out to you that all I get once I've installed this machine is the basic Windows Server 2012 installation. I need to add a role to that, and that's what we're talking about in terms of the application that you manage. So if I installed DNS on this machine, or I installed it as a DHCP server, or I installed it as any kind of service within the cloud, then I'm going to need to manage and maintain that. And so what you see is the basic instance of Windows Server. It's set up straight away in the basic format. So that's how I've accessed my infrastructure as a service virtual machine. Going back to our portal here and looking at some of the details of this virtual machine that I'm now accessing, you can see here that I have a DNS name, and what I'm seeing here is some of the performance and some of the counters that I've been monitoring in my environment. I can create additional monitors if I want to, and we'll talk about that when we get down to the management task a little bit later. But this is basic WMI information that's coming out of my operating system and showing me what my performance is like. I can configure more endpoints if I wanted to and add and edit some of those, or I could configure change the virtual machine size, create selected an availability set if I wanted to, and so on. So that's the basics of creating a virtual machine and how you access that virtual machine. And that's what we would regard as IaaS, whether it be a Linux or a Windows operating system. All right, so moving through to websites. Websites are an implementation of PaaS. And in many ways, again, I will go through the process of creating it. As you can see, I've already created an Azure Tour test yesterday, just so that this was up and running. But I'll take you through the process that I went on that, and we'll show you how this is slightly different to creating a virtual machine, and we'll indicate that when I connect to this website, I've already got IIS installed, and I've already got a template which instantiates the right version of the website, which I can edit and change myself. So it's a very rapid way of starting a website that is scalable based in terms of worker roles and web roles and splitting those two components out. So the first thing that I would do is, again, I would go to New website, and I'm going to choose from gallery. And now I can choose either a website that is based upon blogs, content management systems, or whatever the case may be. I'm going to go to templates, and I'm going to establish the bakery. And this is the same one that I've loaded up already and is instantiated. So basically, this is a template that indicates or that creates virtual machines in a web worker role function and has the application IIS already installed so that we can access our website straight away. So I'm going to give a URL for this. I will call it Azure Tour Test 2. And that's it. One click. Now, whilst that's instantiating, I'll just show you the website that I created yesterday. So the first thing that I can do to that website is browse to it. So you'll notice the website address at the top here. And that's the wrong website that I was showing you. So let's just go back to that and connect to that. Was the wrong one. So there it is, Fourth Coffee. So you can see now that rather than when I fired up the infrastructure as a service machine, I had essentially a blank installation of Windows Server, which then I could customize to do whatever I want with. When I instantiated this website, I've got a machine installed with the IIS server installed on top of it, so that I've, and as well as a configuration file to instantiate this particular website. Now, what I can also do with this website, just to prove that it is a real one, is that I can edit it directly with WebMatrix. So I've installed it. It's connecting directly through to that. And I'm going to edit this live site directly. And I'm going to change the default the default web page, and I'm going to just type in hello world as an example of the fact that I'm changing this website. So I'm just going to save that to the website now, and then go to Fourth Coffee and refresh it, and there you go. I've gone through and I've edited the website, and I've instantiated it, that website, in a really quick way. But go back to my websites now, and I go back to virtual machines just to show you. My virtual machine is still being provisioned there. Go back to my website. It will be up and running now, and I could connect to Azure 2 as a test, and it's just exactly the same as the previous one that I've performed. So I could go into there, I could browse that one, and this website has been successfully created. So going back to our original designation and working through the tabs that we've got, those are the first two important demos, and it outlines the difference between IaaS and PaaS, as we've said. Let's now go and talk about some of the other features and functions. And to do that, what I'd like to do is just go back to the slides quickly. And to do that, I need to stop this. I need to just stop that live screen. And going back to our website here, I would like to move ahead to this slide. All right, one of the things, you know, I know that everybody talks about cloud and everybody has IaaS or PaaS, depending upon the vendor that you are. One of the things that I wanted to bring forth is just a discussion outside of IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS, because we're going to move into some of the other features like media services or mobile services or caching services or Visual Studio, whatever they might be. And one of the ways that I'd like you to think about this is they're really like building blocks in a big box of Lego pieces. And it's a really useful way of thinking about Azure outside of just virtual machines or virtual networks, but what services could a potential architect use to solve a business problem in a very quick and easy way? As an example, it may be that, let's say, for example, you wanted to change the relationship with you had with your customers. Let's say you sold bicycles or something like that, and you didn't want to sell your customer a bicycle every 3 years. What you wanted to do is have a relationship with that customer. So as soon as they bought that bicycle, you would want to have a relationship with them when you sold them, where you sent them information about the telemetry of the bicycle. Let's say the bicycle had a little IoT device on it and send back information about the cogs and the wheels or whatever the case may be, and said, you know, these things are jamming up, so you might need a service. Well, if you think about that and you wanted to deploy that globally, that would take a lot of infrastructure and a lot of different components, including things like notification hubs, content delivery networks, mobile services, media services, so that you could push information back to your customer, but also so that you could take information in about your bicycle and its telemetry and do big data analysis, so things like Hadoop on that, and feed that back into an engineering process as well as to a sales and marketing division. And these are the types of questions and scenarios that we have with some customers. And one of the ways that you can address these problems is to understand the components of Azure and assemble them. And as an example of how you might address that bicycle need is that you might have, say, for example, a notification hub accepting information that's coming in from or event hub that's accepting information that's coming in from the telemetry of your bicycle, sending that back to the Azure data center into a Hadoop service, which is then doing the big data analysis and bringing in bits of pieces of data from, let's say, geographical locations and things like that, and putting that all together and allowing you to do some real business intelligence, as well as feeding that to your sales and marketing people to get them to send out a notification to whether the customer has an Android or an Apple phone or a Windows phone, using Azure to be able to send the information back out to those customers. And so what you've done in that solution is used about 5 or 6 of the different services and assembled them into a solution. And that's where that analogy of building blocks in a Lego game Makes quite a lot of sense in terms of some of the other services that we're about to go and view outside of IaaS and PaaS. So I hope that's given you an understanding of some of the things that we're going to have a look at. So I'm just going to go back and start my screen share again so that we can now start to walk through some of the additional features that you may choose to use in order to develop a solution. Okay, so we're back to the Azure portal. So we've gone through websites and virtual machines. Let's go and have a look at mobile services. I haven't created a mobile service in this case, but really, as I was saying, if you wanted to be able to have a relationship with your customers or have a mobile app that you want to make available to anybody on any kind of device, then mobile services provide you that platform of being able to scale a solution and store data in the cloud, authenticate using things like push notifications and so on, both to Apple, iOS, Android, and Windows phones using HTML and Java as well. So that's the mobile services. Cloud services is, again, a cloud service is a container for a web and worker role. So if you think about a cloud service, unlike a virtual machine, which just has an operating system, a cloud service has a worker role plus code and an application, which is essentially what I've just showed you in the coffee environment. So that's what a cloud service is. SQL databases. SQL databases are a great way of being able to implement hybrid structures. So for example, it's entirely possible to have a SQL server on-premise that is connected to Azure and hosts where Azure hosts the SQL database. And that's the SQL as a service side of things. So we'll be providing SQL databases as a service. Storage. What you can see here is the storage accounts that I've created. Now, I could have one storage account here and having all of my virtual machines blob storage, their file storage, the table storage and queue storage, which is the four types of storage that we offer, connected. So for example, a blob storage or binary large object format is for unstructured data. Table data is for NoSQL structured data. Queue data is for, as its name would suggest, for queues that need to be able to access across hybrid locations. And file storage is essentially applications that may need a file share using SMB can access a file share in Azure directly. So you can establish a file share with a UNC in Azure that you can have applications either on-premise or in Azure being able to access those locations. And I think that's one of the important things that we need to remember when we talk about Azure. Is we see Azure very much as an and discussion. We recognize the investments that you've made in your data center and in your private cloud environments, and we want you to allow you to generate a return on those investments, but also take advantage of cloud services like storage, like websites, like IaaS or cloud services, as and when they meet a business need and are mature enough for your needs. And that's what this tour of Azure is all about, is giving you a flavor for all of the services that you could combine with IaaS or PaaS in order to develop a solution. So we've got through storage there. HD Insight is an Apache Hadoop-based big data analysis. So it's the ability to bring in data, structured and unstructured, from multiple different locations and use that to develop business intelligence and insights into your data. Media services. Media services is essentially a way to create, manage, and distribute content. You can target any kind of device or media format. You can ingest, encode, and protect and stream data from a media service. So that media service allows us, for example, that was media services was used during the Sochi Olympics here in the US, where we streamed data from 41 different providers into a central location, and then used media services to encode that into 1080p or whatever the case may be, and make those available on demand through the content delivery network, and I'll explain what that is in a minute. Moving through to Service Bus then, Service Bus is a way of enabling hybrid applications or applications that live partly on-premise but also partly in the cloud. And it's a way of making sure that you can take data, transform it, and pass it between two applications that may not be well integrated in the form of a connector or whatever the case may be. So it's a way of being able to translate data between services. Now, moving into Visual Studio, I did want to demonstrate this. So I've created a Visual Studio Online account, and I can browse to that Visual Studio Online environment. So this is my Visual Studio Online environment. And again, as you can see here, yesterday I created an Azure Tour test application, or a project, should I say. And I can now go through and use this as my development environment that's connected and single sign-on authentication. You notice that I'm back in as Jason Clark. I'm in the same address, and that's all through Active Directory integration and single sign-on, which we'll talk about in a little while. So Visual Studio Online is available directly from the Azure portal. Now, one of the reasons that I talked to you originally about the Redis cache was probably because we're going to get to this point, and I didn't want to not talk about the Azure preview portal because it directly, you know, references it. So I certainly didn't want to confuse you by the fact that there's two portals, but if, as you're going through, work through this, you're going to see that there are two, and hopefully I've explained why those exist. So the Azure cache is an ability, as its name would suggest, to choose different sizes of memory capacity that is available to you per gigabyte for applications that need massively quick access to data and cannot be provided in terms of disk access. So it's a great way of being able to do that, and we've also now supporting the open source Redis cache, and that's available through the preview portal. Moving on to BizTalk services. BizTalk services are a way of integrating applications, again, in a hybrid nature between on-premise and in the cloud or business-to-business kind of environment. So you can use Azure as a brokering service through BizTalk to create and integrate applications in a B2B manner. Recovery services, as their name suggests, are pretty straightforward. Recovery services allow you to back up your on-premise, so your private cloud in your physical data, with things like Virtual Machine Manager or an agent. You can right mouse click on in your private cloud in Virtual Machine Manager and directly back up your VMs into Azure so that you've got a DR environment in Azure. There are also automated recovery services with that, so that you could, in the case of a site failure, you could have an orchestrated recovery and startup of your site in another data center, and that's what we've got in terms of recovery services. Content delivery networks, as their name would suggest, it's about being able to access high throughput and where we need massive amounts of data transferred and have those served by local servers geographically dispersed around the world. So you can imagine a content delivery network with nodes in the US, Europe, Asia, Africa, South America, and essentially transferring your video file to all of those locations so that when customers go to access your video, they're getting it delivered from a local content point. And so their experience of your website or your mobile site or your media site or your file transfer, whatever it might be, is much quicker, and you get a better response for your customers. So moving on to the scheduler. The scheduler is a way of being able to schedule a job. In this case, let's say, for example, you wanted to schedule a job that automatically went off and retrieved, did an HTTP GET from Twitter on an hourly basis and pulled in all of your Twitter feeds or whatever the case may be. You would be able to go through, establish the job, and then determine the method that you wanted to use. In this case, I used the action of an HTTP GET to go to a particular website on this interval and pull down the information that I need in order to be able to perform whatever task that I might need with that data. So scheduling is a way of being able to start up and shut down and perform actions. API management, as its name would suggest, application programming interfaces management. This is a way of being able to expose APIs that you own to other external customers or whether they be entities like other organizations or individuals. So it's a way of you being able to publish your API and manage who has access to that API in order to be able to have a communication stream with those applications. Machine learning is a way of being able to take data and do a whole lot of analytics on that data in order to be able to do some predictive analysis. So rather than sort of BI and business intelligence and Hadoop, where you're looking at data and you're pivoting on a particular thing, it might be by customer name, by date or whatever. So you're looking at historical data, but you're pivoting on a point and you can see what happened in that point of time. Machine learning is a way of taking all of that data in, doing predictive analysis and being able to determine what might happen in the future. And so machine learning is a relatively new service that has been added. When we get to networks here, we've essentially got three types of networks. We've got point to site, site to site, and express route. Let me explain what they are. So you saw when I created that virtual machine, I had an RDP connection directly to that. But I could also have created a VPN to that machine and a point to site VPN. So from my desktop directly into that machine, or I could do a site to site, which connects your, for example, your data center with Azure via the internet, and that would be a site-to-site VPN. If, however, you wanted high speed and direct access into the Azure data center from your data center, you can use ExpressRoute, which enables an MPLS connection directly into the Azure environment from your data center so that you can have high throughput of data. Traffic Manager. Essentially, what Traffic Manager does is it is a multi-tenanted service that is hosted in Azure, but it has a number of algorithms that allow you to distribute traffic based upon performance, business continuity, price, compliance, legal or tax purposes, and direct traffic to a particular zone or a particular website, whether it be in North America, South America, in Asia Pacific, or whatever the case may be. So it's essentially a way of being able to distribute your traffic and control its connections. Management services are a way of me being able to create additional monitors. So for example, here I created one yesterday, which was simply a monitor to go through and look at CPU to alert me when CPU utilization on this virtual machine goes beyond 90%, I could add different counters as and when I wanted to this environment. Now, Active Directory allows you to connect and synchronize your on-premise Active Directory services with Azure Directory services. So if you're using Office 365 today, you're using Azure Active Directory. And there is probably synchronization between yourself and your Active Directory environment and Azure. Now, this is how I enabled single sign-on and how my username and password that I have within Microsoft enables me to access Azure and the Visual Studio Online components straight away. So effectively, we establish federation and we enable you to trust our authentication. The benefit of that is you also are authenticated with some 2,000 other software as a service providers, so things like Salesforce and Amazon Web Services and Sign and so on. You can imagine having Active Directory federation set up with Azure Active Directory from your on-premise environment, having an icon on your desktop that connects you to Salesforce, double-click onto Salesforce, and it automatically, without presenting a new username and password, authenticates you via synchronization of usernames and passwords across those software as a service applications. So bearing in mind our time, I think what I would like to do is just stop there. Actually, briefly just cover off of Store Simple. Store Simple is another storage methodology where you have an on-premise appliance which allows you to age and structure data age data and place it into the cloud based upon access, the frequency of access. So it's a device that has SSD and IDE drives built into it. Those bits of data that are getting frequently accessed with your environment will live on the SSD drive. Those that are less frequently accessed will be on the IDE drives, and those that are less frequently accessed than that will be backed up to blob storage in Azure. So it's a way of being able to reduce the need for your SANs and NASs as much, not necessarily from a performance perspective, but certainly from an availability perspective. So I'd like to pretty much stop there. I know that's a whistle-stop tour through Azure. It's covered off all of the major components in the Azure, current Azure portal. It's pointed to some in the new preview portal. I've covered IaaS and PaaS as terms of the primary sort of classification that Azure offers, and that it is important to note that Office 365, which is software as a service, also runs on Azure, and as one vendor, we provide all of that through one simple access and IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS in one location. I'd like to just stop the screen share at that point and move back to the slides just for a summary, and then we'll open it up to questions and answers. So moving back to our, just make sure I get to the presentation. I'm just going to move it on one. This is a build slide. Now, this poster is available in the documentation section. If you just scroll to down to the bottom of the documentation page at on the Azure website, you will have infographics, and this is one of the infographics that is available. You know, Azure is being updated and created so frequently, we have to update these posters very frequently, and you'll see that all of the things that we've talked about and a few more things are printed at the in the bottom half of this slide. What you see in the top half is the virtual machines, cloud services, websites, and mobile services that we've been talking about, and which of the services beneath that are brought together in order to deliver that particular solution. So I think this is a nice way of having a reminder of some of the things that we've talked about this morning, and an easy, quick reference guide to the scope of Azure from IaaS through to PaaS and the additional services that you can bring together to build a solution to a business problem. So at that point, I will stop and hand over for questions and question and answer sessions to John.
Great. Thanks, Jason. So we've been able to answer a lot of the more specific questions via chat, but we've got a few general ones here that we'll go ahead and tee up. So first, there's a couple of questions around just how best to get started. Some folks are interested in learning more about websites, and they wanted to get your guidance on what resources they should leverage when they're starting out.
Okay, so getting started in that way, first of all, I think the best way to get started is to sign up for a trial account, and that gives you 3 months free access, and you'll be able to access all of the Azure services in a trial format from that time. Also, if you have MSDN access, you can activate those benefits, and you can have access to the Azure portal with a prepaid amount every month as well. From an MSDN perspective. In terms of collateral, I think the best, and labs and so on, the best place to go is the documentation page. Click on a particular service like websites, and then from websites that will take you through a whole series of starting from very basic. In fact, the demo that I did was be a basic demo that you could is one of the original labs that are available to you. And then also through TechNet, exploring additional labs through the TechNet environment. Microsoft Virtual Academy is also a great place to go for access to predefined labs that are well scripted and structured and are easy to follow. So those would, and that would not necessarily just for websites or virtual machines. I would go to those locations if I was interested in any of the particular services that we've been talking about today. So I hope that answers that question.
Great, thanks. So next up, we've gotten a couple of questions around just high-level guidance for combining private clouds with Azure. So any general suggestions you'd have for hybrid deployments, how people should start out thinking about those?
Yeah, it's a bit, that's an interesting one, because every organization is different. I think some of the ways that I have found in talking to customers that are easy ways to dip your toe into this idea of hybrid cloud. I've got my environment on-premise. I know that I need to be thinking about cloud, but I want to go softly and find out what I should start with first. So my suggestion here is identity. I would start with identity in terms of being able to first of all, make you know for my for me, and this is a personal belief, I believe that security starts at identity. Yes, security has got all sorts of malware, the network layer, the ISO, the full seven layers of the ISO model, each one requiring a security in terms of access control lists and IP addresses and all of that, and anti-malware and firewalling and all of that. I agree with that. There's no doubt about those things are very important. But actually, identity is the place that I prefer to think that, that security starts. So the first place that I would start is activate an Azure account, federate, and that way you can control who's getting access straight away to the Azure cloud and being able to make sure that you're enabling single sign-on, you've got that easy access to your environment, and then you're controlling access to that. Once you've started on that, another great way to have a look at another great starting point is storage. Having a look at storage in an environment, especially with devices like StorSimple, that can massively reduce your, if you're going through a hardware refresh now in the moment in terms of NAS or SANs or so on, or you're going through a hardware requirement in terms of compute and network and storage in your data center, now's a great time to try some of those applications and those services in Azure. In terms of which applications and which services you should start with, a great way to start with that is to use the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, the MAP Toolkit, to have an assessment of your environment and to categorize your applications and services into three. Easy to move to Azure, difficult to move to Azure, very difficult to move to Azure, or whatever the case may be. And then either choose three applications from each of those sections or go through the process of trying to get those applications into Azure, and then the lessons learned from those will really make it a much more slick process as you approach the rest of the applications. The alternative, obviously, is to just start with the easy ones and work from the top down through to the more difficult ones. And I found organizations taking both of those tacks. So I hope that's answered those questions.
Great. Well, we're just about at the end of the session. So Jason, want to thank you again for leading the session today, and a big thanks to everyone in the audience for joining. Please stay tuned for future Azure webinars, and we hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, everybody.